And we are live. It is the first Field of 68 post-game show that we are doing here on the Field of 68 Media Network. My name is Rob Doster. That gentleman that you see there with me is the one and only Deshaun Butler, former West Virginia All-American, longtime overseas pro, also played in the NBA, a lot better than me. This is, since it's the post-game show, it's also the first edition of the Craft Beer Cast. So what do you have for your little post-game beverage there? I got a little... I got a Cape May Dippa, a nice little coastal evacuation, nice little double IPA. What you got going over there, Deshaun?
I got a Paulaner, Oktoberfest Maison. So I'm good. I'm going with I'm rocking with my German and Belgians for the moment right now.
There you go. All right, so we got a lot to talk about tonight. Michigan wanted a blowout. North Carolina got back to the winning ways. Kansas looked like they were going to lose in a blowout and came back and ended up losing that game. Duke also lost. So, all told, we had Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke lose in the same night. But I think that the first game that we should talk about is the team that I just mentioned, the Kentucky Wildcats. We're watching the very finishing touches of it right now. That's why you see keep looking over there to that side of the screen. Yeah. 85 to 65 now. That's a 20-point win. My biggest takeaway, Deshaun, was that – this was a perfect example of what happens when you have a five-out offense like Alabama going up against a team that's going to play Jacob Toppin and Isaiah Jackson and Olivier Saar at the exact same time in Kentucky. It was like modern basketball against throwback basketball, and Kentucky does not have the bodies to be able to play the throwback style that they want to play.
I can agree with you a little bit in that sense with – when it comes to like modern basketball versus throwback basketball, Alabama, they run, they push the ball as fast as they can. If they can get a basket early, they get it. If not, this is a team that just shoots threes and layups. They're not doing in between basketball. They do a good job of like sticking to their game plan. So when you play against a team like Kentucky, where you have these bigs that they have, they're not the most versatile bigs. So it's like it plays into Alabama's hands because these guys like Olivier Saar and Jackson, Jackson's not a bad defender and he's very active, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that you're great on the perimeter as far as sliding your feet with guards or guard-like players. You know, Alabama has a ton of guys that can play numerous spots. It makes them a very dangerous team. I mean, Bruner is a big, but at the same time, he's more like he could play some wing from time to time too. He's quick enough to, I wouldn't go along to call him a three, but he's quick enough on his feet too, and he stretches the floor as well, like the rest of the guys, like Petty and the rest of their team. So it makes it difficult when you don't have those matchups, regardless if it's small ball or you got these guys playing spaced out offense. It's just a matter of if you can defend it or not. And obviously, Kentucky can't. They couldn't at all. They didn't show they could tonight.
Yeah, and it's not just on the defensive end of the floor. That was probably the biggest issue that they had tonight.
Yeah.
On the offensive end, like, there's no space in the paint, right? And that when you have guys like a Karl Anthony Towns, like, that doesn't really matter how much space you have because he's just so much better than everybody else. When you have someone like DeMarcus Cousins, they can overpower people even if you have a team that doesn't really shoot all that well from three. You know a little bit about that 2010 Kentucky team, don't you?
Yeah, cool. Great team.
Just a little bit about it. Well,
probably one of the best teams ever to play in college, but go ahead.
But, I mean, Olivier Saar, like, he ain't Karl Anthony Towns and he ain't DeMarcus Cousins. And when you are not able to completely dominate those matchups in the post, if you want to play big and you cannot dominate every matchup against every team, against every opponent in the paint, you're not going to be that successful playing big. The problem is, you know, entering this game, Kentucky was shooting 46% from three in the SEC, which was leading the conference in three-point shooting. Okay. And they shot 4 for 18 tonight. And I think that this was them just kind of regressing to the mean a little bit. And when they're not going to make shots and they're not going to be able to score in the paint, like, there's just where are you getting your offense from?
Yeah, it's true. I like to, like, I saw the, when I was watching this game, it kind of felt obviously their offense wasn't, as far as their shooting at least, wasn't too tailored tonight. It wasn't pretty at all. I felt like they didn't look focused. Like, I saw activeness, but I saw like activeness without a purpose. Like, guys are over dribbling. Guys, And I don't know. It just didn't look as smooth as it did when I watched them play Florida. And I guess, you know, jump shots help. You make making shots definitely does help. Gives you a little bit more confidence. But I didn't see any lock-in moments in the game where they could, like, stop what Alabama was doing and also impose. Like, they didn't impose any type of will in the game. They didn't stop Alabama from doing anything. They didn't do anything well themselves offensively, let alone just the shooting. So, you turn the ball over. They had 15 turnovers with 14 minutes left in the second half. Like, you're not winning games when they revert back to the old things that they were doing. And then you're not – your energy is okay, but your lack of focus, it just showed tonight. Like, it wasn't a good showing for them.
Yeah. Jack just hopped in the chat, and he asked us to talk about Michigan. And we'll get there. Before we do, though, I just want to really quick talk a little bit about Alabama and kind of where they rate for you, Deshaun. Like, how do you view this team? Are they legit? You know, they've kind of steamrolled everybody in the SEC that is really worth paying attention to at this point. So where do you stand on them? What kind of run can they make in the tournament? Like, is this – like, are they legit? Are they a Final Four contender? Are they a Final Four threat? What do you think?
And if they're healthy, after we just saw two guys, like, kind of get banged up today, if they're healthy – They're definitely the beer got me. Exactly, every time. But if Alabama's a healthy team, they can definitely go. They have the potential to go to a Final Four. They're a very good team. Their style of play is something you can't necessarily prep for too well. Like, it's not like you can just, you know, we would have teams we would play against when I played for Coach Beilein, and it was just you can't prep for Beilein's offense in a quick turnaround game. Like, it's just so much stuff. So, like, our team would have the advantage. You can't prep for a team like this in a quick turnaround. Like, you can run as fast as you can, try to emulate it as best you can, but it's not the same as actually having those five guys out there that can space the court and knock down shots and the pace that they play at and just how they use ball screens. They do a really good job, honestly. I'm watching this team, I can see them making a big run just because of the versatility that they have. And, I mean, they're very well coached. You can say they don't take shots they don't need. They got two or three dudes sometimes that can make really big plays. Like, Shackelford was – he had a couple like, dope finishes or left hand and just strong finishes and made some really big plays as they were, like, stretching the lead. That, you know, they got some guys that can do some very special things for their team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I do think that they're not quite at the same level in my mind as the very best teams in the country.
No. But there's only like three of them. So somebody's going to sneak into those spots, like, sooner or later.
we'll talk about Michigan in a second, but just the last point that I want to make is I think that they're as dangerous as anyone in college basketball because of what they can be when their offense gets rolling, when their threes are going down and they're getting up and down the floor and they're energized defensively and Herb Jones is making plays and John Petty is at his very best. And we're seeing Jaden Shackelford be that kind of like, shot fake, one dribble, draw the defender and kick it out to someone. And when we're seeing Josh Primo make shots, when Jordan Bruner is actually on the floor and healthy and playing well, like they're dangerous. They're really, really dangerous. And when you live, the saying is when you live by the three, you die by the three. So I think it's a little bit of it's a high risk, high reward, kind of embracing the variant style of play. But when you can guard the way that they can guard, like they can stop, they're a very, very good team. I'll take the L on them right here. This is me taking the L on Alabama. I did not think that they were going to be as good as they were this season, and they are. So shout out to them. Shout out to Nate Oates. That's a really good basketball team. All right.
You can take your small L, but I will give you props about Bruner. You were right about him. That was he's a talented. Right? He can play. Like, I was very impressed. Sucks that he had his I don't know if it was an ankle or a knee or whatever the case may be with his leg.
I mean, we talked about it last week, man. The guy's got old knees.
Old knees, yes, old exactly. Knees, so, old knees, but you were definitely, right. But I will give you your credit. You were definitely right about
it. It's the first time all year you give me credit. That's pretty.
I can't have you out here. Can't have you out here beating yourself up. I can't have you there. It's not good for the show.
All right, Michigan. Oh man, that was That was impressive. That was impressive. You don't kick Wisconsin's ass the way that they kicked Wisconsin's ass. Like, that does not happen. That does not happen. Like,
no, it doesn't.
Brendan Quinn, the beat writer for Michigan and Michigan State from The Athletic, tweeted out a stat that basically was like, the last time that this happened, that Wisconsin lost by 20 plus was like 2018, which was 92 games ago. And it's happened like four times in the last decade. Like, they don't get run out of the gym because they're so solid defensively and they play at such a slow pace that it's very hard to
possession wise, you're not going to match them. Yeah, it's like, it's not going to
happen. So, I mean, this they were up. It was 26-23 with 5 minutes left in the first half. 12 minutes left in the second half.
Yeah,
it was 62-26. That is a 36-3 run, Deshaun. We talked about the worst ass kickings that we ever took in basketball in the last podcast, and I think this is going to be up there for like Brad Davison and Michael Potter and those guys. So, man, what a performance from Michigan! Put it into context for me.
Honestly, I watched the game and then I just started like looking at the stat line immediately just to see like what was what, and it just, at the end of the day, Wisconsin decided to get into a shooting contest with Michigan, and it didn't work out well for them. They went to a 3-point shooting contest. They didn't do the things they were doing early in the first half. I mean, I felt like, I remember tweeting before as the game was starting, I was like, Demetri Trice is coming off ball screens, and like, he's a good player, like off the ball screen, getting in the mid range, knocking shots down, being able to like stay within the mid range, get to the basket. And I was like, this is going to be a good game. Damn. It was not the case. And I mean, Wagner and just the gang, just they did what they wanted to. I was super impressed with Liver today. Like, he stepped up early and it kind of got them out of the way as a group. But I was actually impressed with him today.
Yeah, I mean, Isaiah Liver's really got it going.
Yeah,
and he hasn't had the best start to the season ever. Like, he was a guy that I legitimately thought had a chance to kind of be like a top 45 or 50 pick in the draft. Yeah. And he just has not played as great this year as he did last season. But I mean, he was great today. Hunter Dickinson did not even play all that well. He finished with 12, 6, 3 blocks and a steal. But like, he wasn't dominant. Like, you wouldn't have thought that he was the best player on the floor. So I think it just kind of speaks a little bit to the balance that they have. And you know, while we're here, we also got to give a shout out to Mike Smith, man, the Columbia transfer.
It was impressive. It was impressive, man.
The question that we had about this team in the preseason, and the reason why I was a little bit hesitant to dub them like a top 4 or 5 team in the country, was that we hadn't seen their guards get tested yet, right? We hadn't seen their backcourt get tested yet. And, I don't know if Demetri Trice and Brad Davison are necessarily the best backcourt in the country, but if you're going to put up 16-6 on them in a game where you're up by 40, literally 40, 4-0, 40 points in the second half, like, I cannot question you anymore. they're there, man. Good for them.
That's very good for them. I was in doubt because I wanted to see them play against competition. I mean, and what can you say about blowing out the number 9 team in the country? Like, bad. Like, and the energy in the gym with just the players, like, it was great to see. Like, the staff, like, the way they played tonight, it was good overall. Plays, everything. They did a great job. So I can't wait to watch Michigan play again.
Yeah, that was actually a really good point that I was listening to Ant Wright and Stu Douglas, who does the Go Blue with Stu podcast on our network. I was listening to their recording. They went live on Locker Room after the game. And Ant made a really, really good point that I thought was something that we should talk about a little bit.
What is that?
That it was kind of like, you know how when you would go play AAU or when you go play in like some high school tournaments where you weren't playing in your home gym. The teams that always were the best were the teams that could create their own energy. Were the teams where you had like the random people on the bench doing the like stomp, stomp, clap defense chant. You know what I'm talking about? And so the teams that could create that own energy, that didn't have to rely on the crowds to be able to motivate them and get them going and to play like with passion, or like whatever kind of cliche that you want to throw out there. the teams that were able to do that were the teams that always had the most success in those settings. Yeah. And I think that that's very – like, it's very translatable to what we're watching in college basketball this year, because the teams that have been able to provide that energy where you hear their benches yelling, where you hear after every bucket, it's the, yeah!
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, like, facts.
I'm like, we're laughing at it, and it's a joke, and it's funny, but like
– but it's real life,
really,
though. It is.
I really do think that that matters. And, yeah, so, I you could see that from Michigan tonight. Yeah. And I don't want to say that never happens with Wisconsin, but it wouldn't happen in Wisconsin like halfway through tonight's game, you know. So I do think we have to give some credit for to Michigan for all of that, because I mean, man, I don't know what else you can say. Like, so let me ask you this, Deshaun, where do you rank them now? Like, where do you put Michigan kind of in the pantheon of the best teams in the country? Are they in the same tier as Gonzaga and Baylor to you? Are they a step below? Like, is there someone else that's on par with them? What do you think?
Honestly, I would say they're a step below Gonzaga, because, I mean, granted, Michigan came out here and the squeeze of the last three games so far have, like, just played and dominated against ranked teams, I would say. Like, I can't say that they're bad. They look very good, and especially tonight was a great – they won the game in great fashion. Gonzaga has – I feel like they've played – they've already – almost played everybody except for Baylor. Mm-hmm. You know, like I look at the way Michigan started their season, and obviously you can't knock it. I mean, they started the season the way they started it, and they're still going on, they're still trucking along, and they're still winning games, and they're winning obviously in great fashion like they did tonight. But like, I feel like Gonzaga has like answered a lot of calls already. The only call that haven't answered was Baylor yet right now. They've mm-hmm. answered mostly every call they got from a ranked team, and then now they're in there. They're at conference and they're blowing through people right now. And now we get to watch Michigan and we get to watch Baylor play through the competition, and they're playing well, but we'll never know what they'll like in comparison to one another until they meet up, because the scale is different now. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like Gonzaga's already played their hard part of the season. Not to knock their conference. Their conference is not bad, but it's not the Big 12 and it's not the Big 10.
So it's yeah, and it's also a little down compared to what it usually
used
is.
To be. Exactly. That's
what yeah, I'm you know, like St. Mary's is in one of those years where they're kind of like retooling a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, same thing with BYU. BYU lost Yoldi Childs and TJ Hawes and the other shooter, blanket. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Doesn't matter for this conversation. But yeah, I mean, it's they're going to kind of roll through everything that they see in the WCC. So it's going to be tough to gauge them moving forward. And of course, we're going to hear all the same talking points when it comes to, oh, Baylor, or oh, Gonzaga doesn't play anybody in league play, blah, 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 whatever. Mm-hmm. In terms of how I would rank them, I think that Gonzaga is in a tier of their own. You know, as much as I love this Baylor team and as much as the metrics love them, I just think that you look up and down that Gonzaga roster, and they have the number one, potential number one pick in the country in Jalen Suggs, who's probably not going to be the player of the year on this team. That's probably going to end up being Corey Kispert, who could be like a top 10 pick in his own right. Drew Timmy's going to end up playing in the NBA and is the perfect five-man for what they want to do. They have a guy that was a former five-star that's in his third season that started for 2 years in the SEC, coming off the bench in Andrew Nembhard. Joel Ayayi is going to end up playing in the NBA or a very high level overseas and be on the French national team at some point, and he is their fourth or fifth leading scorer, got a triple-double earlier this year. And Anton Watson is just kind of like the perfect fit for a glue guy at the four. Same thing with some of their guards and their grad transfers off the bench. Like, I think when it's all said and done, I do believe that Gonzaga is going to end up going undefeated. And I do think when it's all said and done, we are going to have the conversation of whether or not they are as good or better than like 2018 Villanova, 2012 Kentucky, like teams of that. I think that they're going to end up being in that conversation.
Question.
Yeah.
Do you think there will be a dip off because of the teams they're playing in their conference? Like,
I know you heard
the steel sharpens steel conversation and everything like that with Baylor and Michigan and any other team that is in these, you know, Power Five conferences. Like, they're going to be playing against each other, you know, obviously every 2 days, so on and so forth. And then we're going to get to the end of the season. They're going to have the conference tournament. They're going to be playing against each other. And then all of a sudden now we get to the tournament and Gonzaga has played – a different schedule for the last 10 games. Now, obviously, we've watched Gonzaga go into the tournament, and it didn't matter either way. They wake up, and yep. You know what I mean? They wake up and play. But do you think that this year could be an issue being as how the year's going? That it's they won't be able to wake up against these teams that are playing against competition. To see teams that we're watching Wisconsin go like take a small tank for a second with this game, but then sooner or later towards the end of the season, they'll pick it back up. Like that's yep. Wisconsin will pick it back up. So they'll take their little small dip. And then we used to have that conversation when I was in college. It was like, I'd rather play really well during the year. I mean, all year, of course, but if we're going to play well during the year and then have like the end of January, early February to have our like mishaps, as long as we pick it up by the time we get toward the end of February and March, we're all good. Like I have no problems.
Yeah. It's because it's one of those things where like when you're in league play, eventually someone's going to kind of figure out what you do. They're going to get it exactly. on team. It's going to work against one team. Then the next two or three teams you play are going to start doing that same thing against you. Then you have to make that adjustment and figure out how you can make a counter to what they're doing. And you kind of go through those like those waves throughout a season. I don't think it's going to be like that for Gonzaga. The biggest thing that I'm worried about in that conference is that since they're so much more talented than anyone, just developing bad habits, not being as crisp, running the ball screens, not – making sure that you're cutting as hard or coming off the screens as hard or kind of getting out of, defensively, like not making the rotations that you're supposed to make and being there on time because you're athletic enough to be able to make to make up for the mistakes that you made. That's my biggest thing. So for Baylor, Baylor's right there. I think they're a little bit below just because I don't think they have the same kind of elite high-level talent that Gonzaga does. Offensively, like when they are making threes, they're really, really dangerous. But like Jared Butler, Macy Oteague, Davion Mitchell is not nearly as good as Gonzaga's backcourt. I love Everyday John, Jonathan Chamochachwa, and he's not quite as good as Drew Timmy. The only thing I will say is this, like Mark Vidal is kind of the perfect piece for them for the style they want to play because they can switch everything, and Mark Vidal can guard literally anybody on the planet at this point. I think Baylor's really good. I think they're a cut below. And then for me, it's kind of Michigan is in that same level as like Villanova. We haven't really seen Villanova play, so I'm going to be a little bit worried about what happens with the rust when they come back. But just on paper, like Villanova's still very, very good. So I think Michigan is right there with like Villanova. And I still think like Tennessee belongs in that conversation because then you start getting into like, okay, we got to start talking about like this, that, and the third. Texas. I think has to be right there as well.
Yeah, man, there's like a lot of teams there. There's a lot of teams there. So
yeah, but I mean, Michigan is very, very good. And the thing that's very comforting to me about like hyping them and buying into them is that they have the players that can allow them to match up with these teams that go small. Like Isaiah Livers can guard 2-4. Franz Wagner might be the most underrated defender in the country. Like he is so good. He's a playmaker. Like he can block shots and he can steals. He's so good positionally. He just kind of this was another thing that Ant and Stu were saying on their stream, which I totally agree with, and I'm curious your take. He played for like high level European clubs in Germany when he was younger. Yeah. So when he was like 15, 16, 17, to be able to go and kind of like play and practice with the first team, he wasn't like physically ready. He wasn't gonna go out there and dominate, he wasn't gonna dominate touches. But he kind of had to figure out like the little things that you need to be able to do to succeed. So now that like his talent is catching up and he's kind of on par with everybody that he's playing against, he still does all those little things. But he just so happens to be a guy that's 6'10", can run a ball screen, can pass off the bounce, can make a three. Like he's a stud, dude. I think he's like I think he's legit like a top 20-ish kind of pick in the NBA draft. Yeah,
he definitely has a great chance to be that. I mean, being able to space the floor, like I'm talking about his skill, what I see him doing with these guys. Being able to space the floor and take advantage of
By the way, real quick, Deshaun, I just got to let everyone know, this is the Craft Beer Cast, so if you have your nightcap right now, drop a comment right now and let us know what you're sipping on. go ahead. I cut you off.
No worries. But, like, he's a mismatch problem. Like,
actually, hold on. I'm going to cut you off one more time. Deshaun.
It's free.
You showed the beer.
Yeah.
But that's not the only thing you're drinking. Show them both.
First of all, oh my gosh. So my guy told me to bring a drink. So I brought some wine and then he was like, no, where's your beer? And then my wife had to go downstairs and grab some more beer. Listen, we do a lot of alcohol in the family. It's not much to do right now.
Look, you're telling me, pandemic. You're telling me. My two empties are over there right now.
Listen, all you can do is read and work and drink beer. So
And watch ball. I'm sorry. I cut you off. Go ahead. Make your point.
Nah, but he's a mismatch problem. 6'10", shoot the ball. I can't attack off the bounce. So it helps him in that fashion anyway. It didn't matter if he played overseas or not. If you can do that in college, it makes it extremely easier for you to go out there and play the game. Now, to your point, when you're over there playing and these guys are like 15, 16 years old playing on the first team, that and practicing on the first team, yes, like that helps tremendously, man. Like these guys, you have to learn how to not be the strongest guy on the floor. You have to learn how to basically contribute without being the best guy on the floor, the strongest guy on the floor, the fastest, whatever the case may be, like skill wise, all of the above, and still find a way to leave your mark in the game and help the team. So this kid grew up in Germany, which is like half court basketball capital of the world. Like Germany is 100 possessions of basketball, and you got these big dudes that have probably been muscling him since he was a kid. He's in Michigan now, getting stronger. He's with one of the best big men basketball players, and as his coach to have ever played the game, in Juwan Howard. Like, he's very fortunate. The man's probably learning every day, and you can see what he's doing on the floor right now.
Yeah, I love the job that Juwan Howard is doing. And before we get, I just got to give a quick shout out to Joe M, who dropped in and said he's drinking a Miller High Life. I want to tell a quick story about Miller High Life. So the reason why it's called Miller High Life is because back in World War II, when all of the men were sent overseas to fight in the war, Miller Brewing Company, like, they couldn't sell any more beer. So they had to try to find a way to sell beer. They were getting crushed in their beer sales. So they're like, all right, we're going to make Miller High Life and call it the champagne of beers and try to market it to women in the 1940s. And so that's why it's called Miller High Life, the champagne of beers, which is probably my favorite thing and my favorite, like, worthless piece of knowledge about beer.
Shout out to Joe M
with the High Life, man. I love it. I absolutely love it. All right. The last point I just wanted to make was, you know, there were a lot of questions about whether Michigan was making the right decision hiring Juwan Howard because he was an alum. You know, Ed Cooley wanted the job. Cooley had a lot of supporters, especially in the media, some in the fan base. And I think unequivocally, we can say that, like, Juwan Howard was the right hire. You know, my biggest concern, and I made this point, I went on a Michigan radio station the other day, and I made this point that I was never concerned about the coaching part with him. You know, he spent 6 years in Miami, whether it was, like, on the bench or as a bench player, just whatever it was, just, like, soaking up all of the information that Eric Spoelstra has in his brain, right?
Pat Riley. You know?
Pat Riley,
Lonzo Mourning, like the staff, like Bob McAdoo's there.
I mean, you know all about it, man. You were in that organization. But did you ever cross paths? Were you in there at the same time as him?
Yeah, Juwan was like a great dude, bro. Yeah, he's a great guy, man. He's very smart and he was very helpful. So, like, I could tell, like, he seems, when I was there and he was there with me, he was definitely one of the guys that was, like, into the mentoring part of it. And I feel like that's probably the vibe he gives with his players as his coaching. Like, he's coaching, but he's also coming from a player standpoint and he's mentoring these guys and, like, letting them know, like, you know, if you do it, this is why you can't do it this way. This is why I learned this. And this is what, like, it's easier when you have coaches that have played, not a knock against coaches that haven't, but the guys that have played and they can relate to these players a little bit differently. Like, it's just a different way of explaining things.
Yeah. You know, Duncan Robinson made that same point the other day that like he was so good at, you know, Duncan came in as like a undrafted G League, whatever. Right. And Juwan Howard paid attention to him like he was Dwayne Wade or he was Bam Adebayo or he was someone that, like, they had to pay attention to and they had to develop. And it sounds like you kind of had that same experience with him. Yeah. And it's just – I like seeing him succeed because it seems like the University of Michigan really means a lot to him. And I enjoy seeing these guys come back and thrive at their schools. And like I said, I never, ever had a doubt about his coaching ability. There were questions about, okay, can he do all of the little things that it takes to run a college basketball program? Like the day-to-day nonsense? Okay. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
When you're a head coach in the Big Ten, like you're a CEO more than you are just a basketball coach.
CEO, babysitter, you're doing everything. Like, it's like, man, you talking about this today, man. This is like, it's an insane job. Like, it's tough to do.
Yeah, I mean, you come back from, you go from the NBA back to college, and like all of a sudden you have to track down 18-year-olds and make sure they're going to like to algebra 101 or whatever class you're taking. So it's like, it's very, very different. And that was what I was worried. I wasn't worried about the coaching part. Like, and the other part is like, so he made like what, like $100 million in his career? Like, is he going to want to sit there and be texting with 17-year-old high school seniors all day? Is he going to want to sit there and get on Zoom calls and call high school juniors to be able to put in the effort that you need to be able to recruit at that level? And to his credit, like he has. I don't think we can really question. Like, he went and pulled Hunter Mickelson out of the DMV, out of Washington, D.C., out of DeMatha. So
he's dedicated, man. He's dedicated. I like that. So, I like that.
Great for him. Awesome to see him succeed. All right, let's get into a couple things in the ACC before we can get out of here. Duke lost at Virginia Tech. They got down big. They came back. They almost won, but they ended up losing to Virginia Tech. North Carolina knocked off Syracuse. That was an UGG basketball game. I mean, I think that they're both NIT teams. We really don't have to talk about that one if you don't want to. And then the last one was Kansas got down by 16 points in the second half.
Big game. I love that game.
All right, let's talk about that. So they got down by 16 to Oklahoma State, came all the way back, took a three-point lead. Then Cade Cunningham started doing Cade Cunningham things. So talk to me about everything you got to say about that performance.
We know how – good of a team Oklahoma State is when they get a lead in the first half, at least. They played really well in the first half. The zone really threw Kansas off. And I thought about like when I know everybody's gonna probably sit there and go, oh, here he goes. I thought about the game when West Virginia decided to randomly go zone against Kansas. And West Virginia went zone against Kansas as opposed to Oklahoma State's zone against Kansas, where they made Kansas kind of stand around. Where in West Virginia, the guys didn't really get to the shooters as well. And Kansas started making jump shots. And then once they make jump shots, then they were able to go around and then find other people for jump shots. And it just led to a bunch of other things. They weren't as aggressive as Oklahoma State was in their zone, where they made these athletes kind of like, who are good scorers and good shooters, they kind of made them stand and try to find and make a decision instead of like just playing. I didn't even notice at the time. I was like, yo, why? They didn't get many free throws up. Yeah, well, you're not going to get many free throw attempts when the team's going zone and you're trying to figure out a tactical way to, like, beat the zone as opposed to if it's one-on-one, man-to-man, you're attacking to make a play. So just the zone really threw Kansas for a loop. And then Kansas went on, like, a 21 to 2 run in the second half. And they came back. David McCormack was like the big reason. I was texting you during the game. I was like, David McCormack is like the only reason Kansas even stayed in the game. And then finally in the second half, you know, Marcus Garrett and the rest of the guys started to like step in a little bit and help out. Abaji made some big jump shots. I think he was like 4 for whatever from three. But at the end of the game, when I thought Oklahoma State was going to like lay it down, Kay Cunningham, Bryce Williams, Isaac Likely made great plays toward the end of the game. The block Cade had on the going out of bounds to the save for the layup, that was important. That was like a very big play. Bryce Williams got it, then passed it to, I forget the freshman's name, freshman guard.
One of the Bones. It was something Bone.
Yeah, no, I think it might be the other one. Either way, he got the layup and one, made the basket, tough finish. But the play I thought kind of gave them some life was a minute left where Isaac Lucky kind of like put up the three with a minute left that they I want to say it was like between the top of the key and the right wing. He ended up hitting the three, which basically I think it kind of put them tied the game because they were like Kansas had took the lead. And it kind of gave him some light, So it was good.
He didn't want to shoot it either.
Exactly. Like, he did not want to shoot the ball, man.
because Dave McCormick came out to him and he threw a pump fake and like and McCormick yeah, just like hit yeah, yeah. off. He was like, "Yeah, go ahead, shoot. That's the shot we want." And likely like hesitated and stood there, raised up and knocked it down. So good for him, but like he did not want to shoot that.
No, I didn't want to shoot the ball, and he had a couple instances where he didn't want to shoot the ball. And he didn't shoot the ball great tonight too. So you know how that works when you're not going, you're not shooting the ball as well. You're kind of hesitant in a scenario, but knocking that shot down definitely gave them some energy. And you want that from your upperclassmen on the team. Like, this is the guy that was like the lead. Like, was he like the leading scorer for them last year, or at least the returning guy that played tons of minutes last year? Like, the coach is depending on him to be like a leader in the team as well as Cade. And to knock that shot down, then those guys played defend. They could have easily like wilted. The West Virginia game, they kind of like they put the head down a little bit as the lead was starting to go away from them, and they lost their lock in. They stopped their focus, and everything was gone. They were all over the place. The West Virginia game, and they ended up losing that game after having that big lead. This game, they lost the lead, but they didn't lose their focus, and they stayed together. And you saw that at the end of the game, and that the block to pass to Bryce Williams for the finisher, the and one, it was just like, it was great basketball. It was the play of the game.
Yeah, and I'm glad Oklahoma State got that win. You know, I like Mike Boynton. I think that the situation that he was put in at Oklahoma State was one where they weren't necessarily looking for him to succeed, if that makes sense. You know, when you are the guy that they kind of settle on you, because you were already on the staff and they're going to underpay him, which is what they did when they signed him at first. I don't think that it is a coincidence that it is a young African-American assistant coach that comes in and is getting underpaid and is put in a situation where he can't win. I think you see that a lot because it makes it very easy for you to say, oh, we tried it with the black guy. Now we got to go back to hiring another white coach. So it's not – I want to see him succeed. I want to see him be in that situation and succeed. The last game that they played was against West Virginia, and they blew a big lead at home.
That was a tough one for them. That was a tough one for them.
And they blew another big lead at home tonight, and they came back and they won the game. They scored the last 8 points after blowing it was a 21-2 run, right?
21-2 run, bro.
They should have lost that game.
Talk to me about this. What do you think? Like, one of my guys was talking to me during the game about this. So shout out to my guy, Joel Pinto. He was saying he was talking about the junk defense. We're talking because Kansas ended up running a triangle in two, keeping the ball out of Bryce Williams' hands and trying to keep the ball out of Cade Cunningham's hands. And it literally kind of stopped Oklahoma State from their momentum. Like, Oklahoma State was great in transitional offense, and it kind of led to Kansas even like getting a lead. Like, what do you think about teams using? Because it's all – some people think 2-3 and 1-3-1 is just like its own thing, and then some people think it's all junk defense if it's not man-to-man. Do you think that more teams should be able to – like, not should, because obviously you want these guys to play one-on-one, but what do you think about, like, Kansas being able to just throw that in out of nowhere? Because I've never seen Kansas do that this season at all.
I don't know if they've done it this season, but like Bill Self loves pulling out like the box of one or the triangle of two whenever his team is struggling and just trying to, because you know why? You hate playing against it.
Yeah. Right? It stops you. It halts everything you're doing.
Players hate playing against these junk defenses, and that's why you run them. Because it's just, if you run it for the whole game, every good coach is going to be able to design something or scheme something or make it so like, okay, that you're not going to, like, you can't, that's not going to work permanently. But if you just throw it in there with like 8 minutes left after a team has just spent 30 minutes like kicking your ass, doing one thing and playing one way, like, it's the perfect way to change stuff, because like, you hate playing against it and it's so weird to play against, because there's no like, what do? Do you run zone offense? It's not really going to work because you have two guys guarding in. Do you run man offense? Well, maybe that's not going to work if you have three guys on the floor that aren't able to make shots. So to me, that's why it's something that every coach should have in their playbook. And the very reason why is because everybody hates playing against it. So if you hate playing against something, like, you should run that with your own team, right? Like,
it's good to have.
Yeah. Now, I hate watching it.
I was waiting to see what you were saying that whole part.
Yeah, like I hate when Oh, well, Joel just hopped in the in the chat.
That's my guy, Coach P. That's my man.
Yeah, so I don't love when teams run it. I don't love when teams play a ton of zone. Like, I want to see these guys go one-on-one. That's what I enjoy watching. But I also, like, I get it, man. Like, you got to have that in your arsenal, right? You got to be able to take the other team out of what they want to do and put them in uncomfortable situations, even if it's just for, like, 5 or 6 minutes at a time. So that's just kind of where I settle on. You got anything to say about Duke or anything to say about North Carolina before we get out of here?
What I would say about Duke was it was good to see – it's good to see Duke almost finding their identity of what they can do. I kind of felt like Duke would have won the game if they shot the ball better. Like, I felt like they did almost like – and if they had some bench help. They had no bench. I think they had 6 points from their bench. Like, you can't win games unless, like, everybody in the starting lineup had double digits. You can't win games when your bench gives you six and your starting point guard is 0-for-5 from the field. I personally, like, as a fan of, like, watching Goldwire, I thought he should have played better tonight. He didn't play as good at all, personally.
He's not really a threat. Like, defensively.
Defensively, this is what you expect from him. But offensively, like, I thought that – They had 3-0. They had a great 3-0 start to the conference, and I'm thinking, all right, cool. Like, you know the things you need to work on, and it doesn't work that way. Like, not like a snap of the finger. I'm a better shooter. It takes time, but we gotta get some type of contribution in from the guards to win games. And the other two guys, what, Roach and Hurt, put up 20, and you got 14 from Stewart. Like, but the bench and your starting guard got to give you a little bit more.
I'm with you on that. There's a couple things that I think are important to mention with this Duke team. The first and foremost is that Jalen Johnson did not do anything.
No.
He's coming off.
It's the second other Jalen didn't do anything today either.
Yeah, so he came off the bench. He played 4 minutes. He was injured.
Yeah.
Not having him in the mix. And this isn't a criticism. I'm not taking a shot at him. Like, it should tell you what Duke's ceiling still can be, because they're not getting the best out of the guy that everyone was like, oh, yeah, he could be a top 10 pick. So they still have that guy. They're just trying to bring along, trying to get into the mix and get healthy and get back up to what he can be overall. The other part of it is, like, Wendell Moore just is not – hasn't figured it out yet, man. Yeah. So,
I think that's the biggest issue. I feel like Jalen's going to get hit. Like, he's already had maybe a game or two where he's played well, but, like, obviously consistently he's not. Wendell hasn't had one or two games he's strung together yet where it was just like, all right, cool, this is why you guys picked him up. So it's tough. Like, I mean, I feel for the guys because I know, like, it's a lot. It's a lot of pressure. You're going to, like, basically one of the best basketball schools ever and you're top recruit. It's you still gotta put that work in and show up during these games. Like, they definitely needed him today.
They did. So I still think that there is room for this Duke team to grow, and kind of the same thing as what we've been saying about Kentucky is it takes time, and right now, like, where they are in terms of getting used to playing with each other is probably what they normally are in, like, early December. Right, and we always are asking, like, what's Duke going to be? What's Kentucky going to be? So I still think there's room for them to develop.
Yeah, and they're getting there, though. I feel like they're starting to get to their identity. Yeah. Like, it's coming. Right? It takes time. Like,
and that brings me to my next point, is that Virginia Tech's really good. Like, that's a good, well-coached basketball team. Kevin Aluma is a player in the middle. They can make threes. They can go. Like, that's just a good, well-coached basketball team. There are things that Duke could have done better, but I don't think that there's any shame in losing a close game on the road to Virginia Tech. I don't. Like, Virginia Tech is, like, probably a top three team in the ACC. Now, does that say something about how good the ACC is this year? Yes. Absolutely. there's nothing wrong with, like, losing to this Virginia Tech team on the road. So,
It's a good team.
All right, Deshaun. I think that's about it. This was fun, man. I'm enjoying the Craft Beer Cast, the new one.
Yeah, yeah. No, I got two more to finish. My wife brought up a bunch. She brought a bunch up for me. Should be a good night for me, yeah.
All right, man. It was a pleasure. Thank you for everyone that that hung out and listened. Thank you for everybody joining us in the chat. We will be back again most likely on Sunday night for the Monday Overreactions podcast. But if something big happens, man, we might jump back on the stream. Got to get this Field 68 post-game show going somehow. Deshaun, I'll talk to you, man, later.
Yes, sir.